You know, I was playing for you earlier the comments from Governor Kathy Hochul of New York, Mayor Eric Adams of New York City. Mayor Adams saying that they need to work to figure out how they're going to allow people to have guns and prove that they're fully qualified. I don't think he understands the nature of the decision by the Supreme Court. Governor Hochul basically saying, well, you can't come in here and tell New York what we have to do. We have our... Yeah, actually, they kind of can. They don't seem to understand the ramifications of a Supreme Court ruling in favor of the Second Amendment to the United States Constitution. Dr. John Lott joins me, the president from the Crime Prevention Research Center. Doctor, thank you for being here.
It's great to talk to you.
Now, you filed an amicus brief. You were part of this decision with the United States Supreme Court. So congratulations to you. You won. Tell me what this is a much broader decision than say Heller back in 2008 or McDonald. This is a pretty sweeping and important decision. Please explain it so folks understand it clearly.
Well, there are two aspects of the decision. One is dealing with the issuance of concealed carry permits, and it essentially means that states like California and New York and Maryland and New Jersey and Massachusetts are going to become like the other 43 states in the country. Obviously, there's a lot of groaning and gnashing of teeth. I mean, it's similar to the types of predictions that happened when Michigan or Ohio or, Wisconsin or other states passed their concealed carry laws. There are predictions about horrible doom and gloom that would happen, and, of course, that didn't happen. I mean, concealed handgun permits are no longer really an issue in Michigan.
Sure.
You don't have legislation being put forward even by pro-gun Democrats to try to...
But this
to,
is no longer...
Go back.
You know, is my good friend and yours, Steve Doolin, who was on the program here in the first hour today, he said, you know, this will open up a flurry of litigation because these states that you mentioned, New Jersey, New York, Maryland, Massachusetts, California, whichever, will now have to try to figure out how they can, well, they're trying to figure out how they can still control firearms to the maximum possible extent, but this changes the dynamic completely. And he said in 2008, his class that he teaches, he told his kids, this is not the end of the gun control debate, it's the beginning. He said, this isn't the end either, but it's a lot closer to the end of the gun control debate. At least that's his opinion. What do you make of that?
Well, I think it's the second part of the decision that I think is going to have major impacts, and that is how it tells lower courts how they're supposed to go and deal with the gun issue. What's happened up till now is that courts have been using what they call balancing tests. Look, I mean, you read something like the First Amendment. The First Amendment says Congress shall pass no laws. And what the courts have basically done is said, well, Congress shall pass no laws unless they have a good reason, and the courts get to decide whether it's a good reason or not. When I was teaching or whatever in law schools, I would go and ask people, well, what would they have had to write in order to actually have it mean Congress shall pass no laws? Would they have to write Congress shall never, ever, 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 and maybe by the time you get to the eighth ever, it means they shouldn't pass them? But you have the same thing with the Second Amendment, where it says shall not infringe. They've obviously, many lower courts have been very lax in terms of just saying, well, you know, if the legislature thinks that they have a good reason, that's good enough for us. California, for example, has fallen to that category. The Supreme Court says, no, that's not good enough. When it says something like shall not pass or shall not infringe, that's what it means. If you want to change the Constitution, then you can go and change it. But until then, you have to follow what it says, and they allow some exceptions with regard to history, but it's going to mean a pretty radical change, and you're going to have a lot of litigation going on across the country where courts have previously accepted the claims by states that, we have a good
reason. Let me ask you about this. Here's my question, because generally there's this reciprocity in America. You know, I can drive my car across America, and I don't have to get a license plate from each state because my state issues the license plate, and I'm legal to drive it, right? But if I have a concealed carry permit in Michigan, it's accepted in most states, but it's not accepted in Illinois. So if I want to drive from Michigan to see you out west, right, I have to drive through Illinois. But before I get to Illinois, I have to stop, unload my handgun, lock it in a case, and put it in the trunk of the car or whatever. Do I have to do that today?
Yeah, you have to do that today. I suppose there might be some type of challenge about how this interferes with state commerce. I mean, if you're a trucker and you're worried about somebody stealing your, valuable items in your truck, there might be a case that could come up there. But as of right now, yeah, and I don't think there's going to be any immediate challenges to it.
Point that I'm making is the Supreme Court gave people the right to carry concealed to protect themselves in public. Why would I be able to protect myself in Indiana and not Illinois?
Right. Well, I mean, I think what's more likely to happen is that in Illinois, it costs $450 to go through the process to go and get a concealed handgun permit. In Indiana, the total cost is $12.95. And the difference is that in Indiana, about 22% of the adult population has a permit. In Illinois, it's 4%, and it's mainly wealthy whites who live in the suburbs. What I think, in reading the decision by Thomas, he's saying, sure, you can charge fees, but they have to be reasonable. They can't be fees that go and prevent people from being able to defend themselves. And I think that's... those are the types of cases that we're likely to see come down first.
But at some point, I believe that, because basically what they issued is a federal right to carry law. That's the way I see it. That's why the question comes up. But for those half a dozen states, we'll still have to sort it out. Doctor, I appreciate it. Again, big win, big change for gun laws in America. But the arguing's not over yet. That's for sure. Oh.
Yeah.
So we'll get to that.
Big change for making people safer.
Yeah, there you go. Just like the Senate did yesterday, right? Okay, that's for another day, maybe next week, Doctor. Dr. John Lott, President of Crime Prevention Research Center. You can find out more. CrimeResearch.org. You can bet he'll have plenty to say on this topic. All right, as we move forward today, we're going to wrap up some of the problems we've been facing in the economy and share some information there with you. If you're looking for the best water you can find in Michigan... Michigan is Wolverine Water in Michigan. There's just nobody else. WolverineWaterSystems.com. It is the premier water treatment company in Michigan. WolverineWaterSystems.com. My good friend Paul Mahaney's over there. They've been around for 75 years. No, he hasn't been there that long, but the company's been around for a long time. Your friends, your neighbors, a Michigan company. WolverineWaterSystems.com. I'll be right back.
What's Enbridge doing to keep up with the energy demands of tomorrow? As a bridge to the energy future, we're helping drive the change toward lower carbon and renewable energy sources. That's why we're modernizing our infrastructure to be more efficient and reliable, and why we're investing in energy sources like wind and solar. We are Enbridge, a leading North American energy infrastructure company, and we believe when our energy meets yours, the future is full of promise. Enbridge, life takes energy.
When it comes to getting a new dog, I always tell people start at the shelter because that's a great idea. But sometimes you're looking for something special in your new long-term best friend. And that's when I found the Barking Boutique. They suggest starting at the shelter too, but if that doesn't work, they have a world of wet noses and loving nuzzles and puppy breath to choose from. The Barking Boutique began when its owner David was heartbroken by what he found looking for a new dog, puppy mills, and people he didn't trust. He decided he could do things better, and the Barking Boutique was born, now with several locations in West Michigan.
The Barking Boutique is dedicated to working with reputable dealers, and they guarantee the health of your dog for the next 5 years. They also offer daycare and boarding for your best furry friends. So before you just start guessing about where to get the perfect puppy for you and your family, start with the Barking Boutique. I've been there myself, and trust me, you're going to love the Barking Boutique, and you can start your search right now. TheBarkingBoutique.com. TheBarkingBoutique.com.
The Michigan Chamber of Commerce.
We represent the bakers, auto repair shops, manufacturers, small business owners. Our job is to help businesses succeed by giving them a voice against restrictive regulations and overreaching government. Our commitment is to create and promote good public policy that will restore a strong, healthy economy. Our focus is being your champion for free enterprise. We are the Michigan Chamber, and we stand ready to fight for Michigan.
To learn more about the Michigan Chamber and how to become a member, visit michamber.com.